Welcome, everyone, to the March 16, 2019 Worldwide Fellowship Call on the Power of Pressure Relief Meetings and PRGs, presented by the Resource Development Committee of Debtors Anonymous. My name is Diana B., and I'll be the moderator of this call today.
Hi, Diana.
Note that the speaker portion of this call is being recorded, and that the speakers have consented by their participation in the call to having its recording uploaded to the DA website at debtorsanonymous.org/podcast. Now let us open with the WE version of the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change.
The courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
First, as a reminder, to keep your phones on mute by hitting *6, which will minimize extraneous noise while the speakers are sharing today. And note, you can hit *6 again later in the call if you wish to unmute your phone to share. The mission of the Resource Development Committee of DA is to create revenue for the fellowship, including 1, increasing Seventh Tradition contributions and clarifying the use of the Seventh Tradition funds, 2, encouraging member participation in service at all levels, and 3, increasing awareness within the DA fellowship about the importance of self-support in DA at the group, the intergroup, and the world service levels. The RDC's financial goal for the 2018-19 fiscal year is a 20% increase in individual and group contributions over the 17-18 fiscal year. And so far, from July 1st to January 31st, we show a 26% increase, so we are well on our way. However, it should be noted that individual contributions have increased substantially this fiscal year, whereas group contributions have remained flat. To be more specific, the DA Fellowship contributions this year from July to January total $78,717, and comparatively, from July 27 to January 18, the DA Fellowship contribution totals were $17,500 less approximately, or $62,270. So thank you for all your service and your generosity to the DA Fellowship. Now let's take a moment and listen to the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 promises of DA. First, our member Celia will read the 12 steps.
Hi, this is Celia. I'd just like to ask that everybody *6 themselves because I'm still hearing some background noise on the call. The 12 steps of DA. 1, we admitted we were powerless over debt, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood.
Is that working? That's got to go back. You want me to go this one?
Yes. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Hey, guys.
Is that all the way back?
6 here because I'm hearing quite a bit of extraneous noise. Thank you. Sorry, Celia.
5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive debtors and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Celia.
You're welcome.
And now we'll have Chris read the 12 traditions of DA.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm a compulsive debtor.
One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on DA unity. Two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as God may express God's self in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for DA membership is a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or DA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the debtor who still suffers. Six, a DA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the DA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every DA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Debtors Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, DA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Debtors Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the DA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. And now we're going to have Barbara, who will read the 12 promises of DA.
Okay. I'm Barbara. I'm a debtor, and I will start. Number one, where once we felt despair, we will experience a newfound hope. Two, clarity will replace vagueness. Confidence and intuition will replace confusion and chaos. We will live engaged lives, make decisions that best meet our needs, and become the people we were meant to be. Three, we will live within our means, yet our means will not define us. Four, we will begin to live a prosperous life unencumbered by fear, worry, resentment, or debt. Five, we will realize that we are enough. We will value ourselves and our contributions. Six, isolation will give way to fellowship. Faith will replace fear. Seven, we will recognize that there is enough. Our resources will be generous, and we will share them with others and with DA. Eight, we will cease to compare ourselves to others. Jealousy and envy will fade. Nine, acceptance and gratitude will replace regret, self-pity, and longing. 10. We will no longer fear the truth. We will move from hiding in denial to living in reality. 11. Honesty will guide our actions towards a rich life filled with meaning and purpose. 12. We will recognize a power greater than ourselves as the source of our abundance.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Hello.
Help and guidance have faith come. All this and more is possible when we work this program with integrity and to the best of our ability, one day at a time. A life of prosperity and serenity will be ours. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Sorry to have interrupted you. Could we really make sure star six is hit to minimize the extraneous noise and desire for bathroom break? Just to take a moment to, I'm going to take a moment to introduce Joanne. On behalf of the speakers, because she is going to be the timekeeper. So if you have some preferences for how much time you need or when you'd like to get a warning, Joanne is the person to speak out for. Thank you, Jo. Great. And just to kind of keep things moving along, we're going to take a look at what our topic is today, which is the power of the PRG, that is pressure relief meetings and pressure relief groups. As your resource development committee, we consider the RDC's mission and the ways we might share our courage, strength, and hope with the fellowship throughout the year. We noted that promise two of DA is clarity and observed in our own recovery that tool four, the pressure relief meeting, offers us a direct path to that clarity by asking for and accepting the help and guidance of more experienced fellows and looking at our financial pressures. As it states in our literature, the fourth tool, it says, quote, after we have gained some familiarity with the DA program, we organize pressure relief groups consisting of ourselves and two other recovering debtors who have not incurred unsecured debt for at least 90 days and who usually have more experience than us in the program. The pressure relief group meets in a series of pressure relief meetings to review our financial situation, and these meetings typically result in the formation of a spending plan and an action plan. We are blessed today to have four speakers on the call sharing this experience, strength, and hope on the power of pressure relief meetings and groups: Vanessa from Boston, Jerry from the upstate New York area, Elise from Northern California, and Laura, who also hails from Boston. And as we go further, just please allow me time to read DA's promise to clarity. Clarity will replace vagueness. Confidence and intuition will replace confusion and chaos. We will live engaged lives, make decisions that best meet our needs, and become the people we were meant to be. So first, I'd like to take this moment to introduce Vanessa. And Vanessa, if you could please tell Joanne, our timekeeper, what you would like in terms of a warning.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm a compulsive debtor. And for timekeeping, if I could have a warning at 5 minutes and at 1 minute, that would be great.
Okay, great. And you're going to speak for 20 minutes?
Yes. There.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we all set?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. Not happy with it, but, you
know. Okay, so I'm Vanessa. I'm a debtor, and it's my honor to be on this call today. I am always blessed when I give it service and receive service, so I'm happy to be here. I'm going to spend my time speaking about mostly my experience with PRGs, but I sort of break this down into four segments. I'll give a little background first on my DA experience. I'll speak about my experience in pressure relief groups or pressure relief meetings. And then I'm going to talk some about the logistics of pressure relief meetings, and then I'll wrap up. So I found my way into DA in 1991. So I've been here about 28 years. And at the time that I came into DA, I had for several years before then been aware of my dishonesty, frankly, around money and debt. And every year, every New Year's, you know, that was going to be the year that I got it together and figured out how to manage my finances. And the year would go by and that wouldn't work for me. And so it was actually the first Saturday in January of 1991 that I, in desperation, found my way into a DA meeting. And the thing that struck me immediately upon being there was the honesty in the room. For me, for so long, my finances had been a secret. Growing up, my parents didn't talk about money. I have memories of them, you know, sitting at the kitchen table, this light kind of hanging from the ceiling, and them, you know, trying to figure out what bills they were going to pay and having some disagreements about how to allocate the money. But, you know, in school, when we would have these forms that had to be filled out about family background and demographics or whatever, and they would ask about family income, and my father always said it's none of their business. And I was embarrassed about that because I would take in the form and turn it in, and it wasn't complete because, you know, that was information that he was not willing to share. So I grew up in this sense that, you know, you didn't talk about money. And so when I really got into trouble with debt, I had been in graduate school and took out a school loan to finance my education and began to use that money to live on and then charged my tuition and all the accompanying expenses that went along with it. And I already had some, you know, fairly sizable credit card debt before then, but that like took it into the stratosphere in my view. And so while I lived a life that appeared to be somewhat prosperous because appearance was always important to me, I would, charge tickets to the theater and take friends who would give me cash, and that was the money I would sort of live on. And so I was getting deeper and deeper into debt. So when I first walked into a DA meeting and heard people speaking about their finances, I was frankly blown away. I had never heard such honesty, and so I knew I was in the right place. And I took to the tools immediately. It made sense to me. It looked like a path forward. And so I began writing down my money. I went to meetings faithfully. And it was probably about a year in that I had my first pressure relief meeting. I had worked out a spending plan on my own. I had changed the way I was spending. I had stopped incurring debt. But it took me about a year to actually ask for my first pressure relief meeting. And since then, I would say that I have given hundreds of pressure relief meetings. And I've received well over a couple of hundred of pressure relief meetings myself. So this tool has become really a foundation to my recovery. The thing that stands out for me most about pressure relief meetings is the presence of higher power. I think it says somewhere in the literature, that when, two of us are together, higher power is there, and we're a fellowship, and we're guided by higher power as long as we are open and present to that possibility. And so I'm not sure how it all works. But I have been astounded more times than I can count by the outcomes of pressure relief meetings. I'll sit in a pressure relief meeting. It may be the first time I'm meeting with somebody. I don't know a lot about their situation. And they'll begin to share their story and what the pressures are and what their financial concerns are. And I'm sitting there in my head going, oh, my gosh, how is this going to work out? Their income is... their expenses, exceed their income. They have these complicating factors. And I'm just sitting there going, I don't know, I don't know where this will end. And every time, absolutely every time, it gets worked out. Sometimes to the penny. I've been astounded how many times, we work and we talk things through and we work on a spending plan, and it turns out at the end that when we look at the income and look at the expenses as we've worked it out, it comes out exactly right. There's a perspective and ideas that get generated from doing a PRG with, a partner, and there's three of us there together, and thinking things through and talking out loud and sharing ideas will open up a possibility that otherwise none of us had considered or known possible before. So, higher power's presence is clearly a factor in the success of this tool, in my view. I think one of the important things with a pressure relief meeting is to remember that it's tailored to the person who it's being given for. I might have ideas in my mind or a format that I've used in the past that, can work. But it's really meeting the person where they're at and hearing what it is that they need out of the meeting, what it is that's causing them pressure, what they would like to accomplish in that time frame, and then going from there to make sure that the time allotted in the conversation really responds to what they need, again, leaving space for higher powers guidance. And, I'd say about pressure relief meetings, what I say about DA and you hear in the rooms all the time is that it's about the money until it's not about the money. So in my view, beginning PRGs are really about dealing with the finances, getting a solid spending plan, figuring out how the spending plan can be worked in a person's life based on their unique circumstances, doing those kinds of nuts and bolts. And then once a person has, a solid plan and it's working, they're working it to the best of their ability and they're feeling some financial relief, then I think the pressure relief meetings move into a sort of combination of financial work and visioning and planning and looking toward the future. I think that, pressure relief meetings are a great way of having our dreams and visions fulfilled. And I find it really helpful when I'm giving a PRG to have a sense of what the person's vision is, because it will help me and the partner that I'm working with to really understand what that person wants in their life and to make sure that the money, that the resources are aligned in such a way to have those dreams and visions come true. I know one of the breakthroughs for me in an early PRG was looking at how much money I was spending on parking tickets, living in Boston, and parking where I needed to because I was usually running late, and it was like I just got to park, and then I would end up with tickets, and I always paid them. But when I added up how much I'd been spending on parking tickets, and I had this dream of buying and owning my own home, and it was like, wow, that's money that could go toward this vision of mine, this dream. And my PRG really helped me think through strategies around how to park legally, stop incurring those expenses, and to begin to create a category for a new home, which 5 years in, I was able to do. So, I think that pressure relief meetings just hold so much possibility in that way. In giving PRGs, I've gained such a broad perspective of what's possible in people's lives. You know, I came from a certain background. I have a career in an industry where I mostly interact with people who also work in that sphere. And so I began to see for myself, what are the possibilities? What ways people actually earn income? The spectrum of jobs, the creativity, the resources. I've done PRGs with people who have very limited resources, and I've done PRGs with people who had resources up beyond my imagination. But what that let me see was that it was possible. And of course, the value of service is always worthwhile. It just expands our lives, as we all know, beyond what we can even imagine. And so a PRG to me really helps to ground us in the present, connect us to our numbers, relieves whatever pressures may be happening, and creates a future. And so that's sort of my insights, awareness around the value of pressure relief meetings. In terms of the logistics, I think there's sort of three phases, if you will, to a pressure relief meeting. It's not just the actual meeting that happens. But there's the beginning, which is asking for help, and the preparation in getting to the meeting, getting a schedule. It's, often recommended that there be a male and female involved in a PRG, I think simply for a different perspective. And for years I did that. I have to say in the last couple of years I've been working with two other women. I feel totally okay about that. But for years, for most of the years that I was getting PRGs, I did honor the male-female concept and found it worthwhile. I think that once you've scheduled a PRG, I know this happens for me, once a PRG is scheduled and I've been willing to ask for help, something opens up. I become clearer about what is pressuring me. I'm more aware of what it is I need. I usually have a little more honesty around my money and keeping my records up to date and being more rigorous with that. And I think it's important to think ahead. You know, what is it that I want to accomplish in this time? People are giving service to me. They're devoting their time. And how do I want to best utilize that time? And so that's the preparation. And then there's, where you have it is, for a long time, I had pressure relief meetings in neutral places. Now I'm in a three-way PRG, which I'll talk about in a second. And we rotate to each other's homes. I think the important thing is that a pressure relief meeting be held at a place where a person is comfortable, not distracted by outside influences, and where you can speak freely and not feel, confidence is being broken, that sort of thing. Then the APRG arrives, and in my experience, as I said before, higher powers present. And so taking the time to pray and invite higher power to be there, I think is important, to set an agenda, allocate time per topic, have somebody keeping time, laying out the pressures, and then prioritizing based on what the person needs. What do they most want to have be accomplished during the time? Typically, in my experience there, an hour and a half. And that time is given for whatever that person needs to work on. And then there's feedback and discussion and working
through
whatever there is, thank you, to work through. And it's really an opportunity to get support, no shame or blame, honest approach, compassionate, and really being open and allowing two other people to get to know where your vulnerabilities are and sharing and being willing to hear the feedback. And then the pressure relief meeting typically ends with an action plan. And then comes the hardest part to me. The pressure relief meeting's over. I'm feeling relief. I have my action plan, and it's easy for me to take it home, put my notes away, and go about my business. And so it's important for me to have a plan on how I'm going to implement my action plan. And for me, that is having my action plan someplace where I see it all the time. Might be, posted. For me, it's posted in the office. It can be on the refrigerator. You can carry it in your wallet or your purse, wherever it's going to work for you. But I think keeping it present and then setting up a plan for how to work the actions. If there's something to be scheduled, get it on the schedule. Book in with others, the actions taken. If you have a sponsor, which is, I think, important in working a PRG, is to share the action plan if your sponsor is not a part of the PRG, to share the actions and, ask that the sponsor help you be accountable. I know I do that. I will let my sponsor know what I'm working on, and she'll check in with me to see, am I on track? Do I need any support? How are things going? And I think that really helps me to keep on track with the actions. And then if you don't have one already scheduled, which in my case, I do a PRG with two people. We do it about every 6 to 8 weeks. And so ours is always scheduled after the last one. But if that isn't the case, then I would say as the actions begin to get completed, it's time to schedule another PRG to keep the pathway open and, the journey in process. So in closing, I just want to say that, as I started out, I love PRGs. They have absolutely changed my life. They've given me clarity, support, to keep me honest, and really moving forward in my recovery. I know without question my life wouldn't be the same without them. My income has increased 15 times from when I first started doing PRGs. And when I needed to ask for increased income, it was with my PRG that I worked through what it was I was worth and how to talk about that. I'm confident I wouldn't be married without a PRG. Working with a PRG, I was able to navigate relationship issues, talk about money in my marriage, how to support my stepchildren in a way that helped me clarify boundaries. And I'm moving towards retirement. I'll actually be retiring at the end of the year. And I began planning for that probably now 5 years ago in my PRG, talking about what a retirement spending plan would look like, what it would take for me to get there, and, what my fears were, and working that through. And so for me, My PRG always involves talking about finances, clearing up anything I need to. As a matter of fact, I was in a PRG this morning, and I spent some time talking about some unexpected bills that have come in and how those were going to be paid and my feelings around. It's been a real honor to give service in pressure relief meetings and to receive the gift of this program through the services of others, through the service of others has been nothing but miraculous in my life. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. That was really inspiring. I want to take a moment now to let people know that because of the extraneous noise, I'm going to try to mute all callers. It's not a command I'm familiar with. But I'm going to put that on, and then if anybody needs to speak, including Joanne, the timekeeper, please unmute yourself with a star six. I'm just going to try to do my best to
keep the background noise. And just a note, any speakers, please unmute yourself with a star six, including Joanne, to announce the time. And then when you're done sharing, please press star six again to remute yourself.
Okay, I'm going to hit star 5 now.
Okay.
But before that, I want to introduce Jerry from upstate New York. Jerry, if you could tell Joanne what you would like in terms of a warning for 20 minutes there. I'm going to star 5, so you're going to have to star 6 to unmute yourself in order to do that. Okay, so here I'm hitting star 5 now, guys. Thank you for your patience.
Hi, this is Jerry. I am going to share for 15 minutes, and I would love a two-minute warning if that's possible. Okay. I assume
Joanne, did you get that?
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to also hang on. All right. So, my name is Jerry, and I'm gratefully recovering in this program. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about my background and why debting became a problem. You know, I come from a lower middle class family, and we were always struggling with money. One of the underlying issues that was always running through the emotional dynamics of my family was that my mother had been a brilliant student. She had a very high IQ, and she was a star, you know, she was an A student. And she also had a brother who was the same, and this was in the early 1950s. And she was pulled out of high school when her brother got accepted into university, and she was forced to go earn money to put him through school, because at that time, it was the son who went to school, and she had to go work in a factory. And so that was a major theme. I think she felt betrayed and that her promise had been cut short. And the overriding characteristics of that she took away from that were that ambition was bad and education was bad because it kind of ruined her life. And so any kind of ambition and self-seeking and was considered selfish. Earning was selfish. And so, and my father, in a nutshell, to save a lot of time, because I don't have a lot of time, was raised by 700 nuns, all right? So he just absorbed an enormous amount of shame, period. And to this mix, I was born, and I was born, you know, I came out of the womb kind of like the singing frog in that cartoon, that Warner Brothers cartoon of the construction worker. I had a top hat on, and I was gay, and I was ambitious, and I was everything that was going to upset the apple cart in this family dynamic. And I mention gay because there's an under-the-radar aspect of being gay. There's a kind of secrecy and a kind of shame and a kind of And I think that there's a big connection between those, the characteristics of growing up in that way and debt. Debt is under the radar. It's a secret. It's something people don't know. And I think to save a lot of time, I can tell you that what eventually got me in so much trouble with debt was big shotism. In other words, trying to be something I wasn't. Using debt as a way to camouflage my life, as presenting my life as differently than I was. And, of course, the irony is that people, of course, see right through it. But I felt like debting was a way for me to have a secret quality of life that was beyond what I was earning. So when I, you know, they say that no one comes skipping into the rooms. So when I finally dragged myself into the room 7 years ago, I was confused and I was broken and I was bringing a whole set of underlying issues that I was not able to solve anymore. And I simply, you know, I just didn't, and the idea, you know, there growing up, all, you know, money was so tight, it was always a secret. What my father earned was a secret. I remember him asking, I remember me asking him what he earned, and he was so ashamed of it that he wouldn't tell me. And now I realize when I look back how hurtful that was of me to even ask, and that he was a good father and he was a good provider. But I, in other words, but you know, 35 years after that childhood, or 40 years after that childhood, I brought the culmination of all the toxic effects of that dynamic of you know, under earning and debting and shame and guilt, and I brought that into the rooms. And my feeling coming in was that I couldn't figure it out anymore. I just could not manage my finances. I couldn't understand. I was in debt with the IRA, with the IRS. I was in debt with, you know, I was my car. I was just living. It was crazy. My life was just insane. And when I came in, I'll tell you what led up to my first PRG was. I'm going to tell you the mini road that led up to my first PRG because I got a sponsor right away, and he was very strict, and he was just the facts. He didn't want me to discuss too much. He wanted me simply to do a question a day and do step 1, 2, 3. And so I did that. I did a question a day. I phoned him every day. I answered the question. And for 90 days or for the first 6 months, whatever it took to do step 1, 2, and 3, answering all the questions very cleanly, simply, I actually kind of surrendered. And I kind of gave up trying to figure it out and understood that there was this weird, different set of principles and steps and traditions and fellowship that was a collective understanding of a different way to look at money, you know. And what happened was a kind of miracle after my third step. I remember turning over my third step to him, and the phone rang the next day, and it was something that came. I was not initiated by me, but literally a job offer came in, and I had to phone my support, you know, that I had received in the fellowship to understand what was I going to charge for this, because my first inclination was to do the job for free. And they said, no, you're not going to do the job for free, because if you offer to do the job for free, they're going to rescind the job. They're going to say, why are you doing it for free? So this is just the road up to my first, very, very first PRG. And so I had to, I submit, they said, here's what you're worth. And I laughed. I said, I cannot ask this for on a daily, as a daily rate. That's usually what I charge per week. You cannot do that. They will say no. They will do. Anyway, I did. I put it in. I put in the budget. And I just said, well, that there goes that job. And I waited. And after 3 weeks, with every single day, I had to phone everyone in the program and say, I need to call them. I haven't heard from them. And they're going to, you know, they're laughing at my budget, you know. And they said, no, 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 they haven't gotten to it yet. You have to trust. If you've submitted the budget, the next call will be coming from them. And after 3 weeks, they did call, and they approved the budget, and they just hadn't gotten to it. It was just on the pile on their desk, and they just hadn't gotten to it. But my value, what I'm leading up to saying is that my PRGs have been always about connecting to a value that I cannot do on my own, a value of who I am as a person, of who I am as a professional. And I found that organizing my first PRG was really challenging because for me, this growing up with secrets and shame, the idea of showing my numbers to people I didn't know was such an act of total surrender. I was so terrified. And so I know that for other people, getting a PRG is easier. I think they go to, you know, if you go to meetings every day, you get friendship. But for me, getting those two people the first time was so terrifying, so difficult. It took me weeks, if not months, to get these two people to agree to a PRG for me. And I think that that's part of the healing process. The difficulty, I always want to say to a newcomer, if you're having trouble getting a PRG together, that's part of the healing. I mean, coming out of the shadows, coming out of the darkness, and asking for help and laying down and just surrendering. PRGs to me are complete and total surrender. They are parachuting into the unknown. And the pressure relief that comes, I always say, stick around for the miracle. Do not pick your miracle. Your miracle is because if you're like me, you'll aim low and you'll hope for like something small. This program is about beyond your wildest dreams, and that's what my experience has been. So when I got my first PRG, it was I remember being struck by two things. One was that it was in the middle of a blizzard. It was in New York, and I was so nervous, and it was going to be at 5 o'clock, and we were meeting at the, you know, at the Whole Foods down at on Houston Street, and I was just waiting for the text to come in that, you know, there's a blizzard, you know, we can't do it, we'll have to move it, and it had taken me like 6 weeks to get this time to get these two people's schedules in order. But I got to tell you, the spiritual awakening was that there was no cancellation then. Out of the slush and snow and wind came these two people. And I had, you know, kept my numbers, and I was so moved and touched that they didn't cancel. And that, to me, was the first act of faith and unconditional love that I've experienced in this program. I found it very, very moving. And as far as the PRG itself, I will say that here's the miracle of that first PRG. It had nothing to do, and they never have anything to do with deprivation. I was convinced, and I'm sure some of you will laugh, that they were going to say, you have to cut out Starbucks. What is this $5 coffee a day? I thought it was them looking over and kind of reaffirming all the negative self-image things that I had perpetuated upon myself. It has, and PRGs have nothing to do with deprivation or installing new levels of deprivation. The miracle of that first PRG was that the one PRG person said, how much would you like to earn in your life? And I said, I gave her a number, and it was $150,000 a year. And she said, I just want to let you know I'm doing PRGs for a long time, and 95% of people who answer that question, they all say $150,000. And we were in Whole Foods, and she said, you know, look down, and there were hundreds of people in Whole Foods. And she said, all of these people are dealing with $5,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 rents. Everyone in this store. And so, you know, with your figure, it's just like what she did was basically give me permission to not live within the confines of my upbringing, which my upbringing, debt became love. In other words, to be in debt and to struggle against money with money issues became the emotional fabric of our family, and it became a way to, it was authenticity, it was love, it was family connection, but it was also toxic and wrong, and it was also based on the baggage of my parents and their own issues. So what she did by saying, you know, you're allowed to ask for more, you're allowed to say more, was the first person in my life when I was in my 40s to say, it's okay to question what you want to earn. It's okay to crack it open. And the pressure relief came not from tightening here and doing this and cutting cable. The pressure relief came from being allowed to ask for what I felt I needed to move forward. In other words, to ask for more, in other words, to allow more money to come in. It wasn't about tightening up what I spent. And that was an incredible gift, and my life changed from that moment on. My second PRG was also incredibly powerful because what came out of it was the idea that my brain had been trained to debt. And so it was had nothing to do with, you know, stop doing this, stop doing this. It was all about, you know, your brain is switched on to debting instead of earning, and we're going to just move the needle. Even if you stop debting $1 and earning $1, you're going to, your life's going to get better. And so my experience with PRGs is that they are never what I think my toxic self-talk is. They're never about that. They're all about compassion. They're all about pressure relief in ways that I cannot see. And the four of us who are there, the two PRG persons and higher power, are there to kind of bring God into my money. And so the pressure relief is for me that I don't have to keep trying to figure it out, that God will do for me what I can't do for myself. And the PRG is this manifestation of that. And these people showed up in the snow because people had showed up for them. And I think finally what I'd like to say is that the program for me, when I look forward into my life, will always be there. It will always be free. You know, it's always free of charge. When I think about my retirement plan, I always factor in DA and PRGs because they will always be there. And there was no problem that's not solvable. And that's something that's more powerful than money in the bank for me. And it gives me the comfort to actually earn, you know, the money I need to for my retirement because I know that I won't be doing it alone. So I think that is my time, and that's what I have to say about PRGs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jerry. I so appreciate you volunteering to share today and share your inspiration and wisdom. So we're going to turn the call over to Elise from Northern California. Elise, are you on the line? Star 6 to unmute.
Hi, I'm unmuted now. Yeah?
Fantastic. Yes, you are. And why don't you tell Joanne what you need in terms of a warning for a share that's up to 20 minutes long?
Okay, thanks. Joanne, I think, tell me when I've spoken for 10 minutes and then at 15 minutes, and I may only need 15.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you.
All right. I'm not sure. My name's Elise. I'm a debtor and business owner. I came to DA. Actually, I came to BDA in 2008 when the financial markets were falling apart and my business was rental properties. I had over $1 million in secured debt on properties that were worth about $300,000. So it was pretty dire. I was scared. I was on disability. I was so anxious. I couldn't keep food down. I couldn't drive. I couldn't read. I was really sick. And when I got to, it was January of 2008. I had no idea what my options were. I was scared. I was trying to work with the banks and they were not very communicative or, you know, I just didn't know how I could work this out. And, I needed real people to talk to about, real business people to talk to about how, you know, what do you do? So I came to a BDA meeting and I immediately met other business owners who understood where I was, who maybe had been there or even somewhere worse. It took the shame out of my situation. They told me that whatever your debt is, that's just the price of entry. We all have, had a number. Some of us, I'm in Northern California, so the numbers are big here. Doesn't mean you're worse or better. It's just that's the number. And welcome. And the higher the price you pay, the greater the opportunity. Or, well, I would say the more I think I was on my knees, right? I knew I was at a bottom. I had no option other than trying to work the steps around this. And I had worked multiple other 12-step programs, but this one felt like the graduate program of 12 steps. And the good news is it's hard work. It's very hard work, this program. But this is the program also where I got the goodies. So I had to do really, really hard work, and my life completely changed for the better in pretty much every way. I went from working a full-time job in high-stress Silicon Valley plus managing the books, the finances for a family business. So I had two jobs, plus I was a mom of a little kid, plus I was in a marriage that wasn't working. Nothing was working. To a new life that's beyond my wildest dreams. My kid's 18. I have plenty of money saved for his college. I'm in a new marriage, supportive and abundant. I work part-time from home, and my bills are paid, and then some. I have lots of money in the bank. I don't have to worry about how I'm going to get. I can not work for periods of time, and I don't have to worry about how am I going to get my bills paid. So my life is completely done a 180 or a 360, all from being willing to ask for help and then to take the advice. So as far as the power of PRGs, this is what I wrote when I was contemplating what that power is, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So three people getting together, bring God into the conversation or have that potential, and miracles happen. So one of the things that I was told to do was begin with the end in mind. So what's the purpose? Why are you asking for this PRG, Elise? Tell us you need to be very specific and write down your three pressures that you want relief from. What specific pressures are making you crazy? Write those down. And that's your agenda for the meeting. The other thing I was told to do was treat this like a business conversation. It's a business meeting. It's not a feel-good chit-chat. You're here because you need help. You need to make changes. So be willing to hear the hard facts and the bad news and be willing to make a change, to make a plan to improve it. Also, come prepared to the meeting. So, you only get what you put in, get out of the meeting what you put into the meeting. So you need to come prepared. And that means not only know what your pressures are, but have a clear picture of what your current situation is. So I got tough love. They were like, no, we're not going to talk to you. We're not going to give you a PRG until you have your actuals written down. And you need to bring those. And literally the person said it needs to be summarized in one page and 12-point font so that it's very easy to read. And I want to know every dime, how it's, you know, how you're using your money. So I want all your income, all your expenses, and then the net of that. And then I want to see all your liabilities, so all your debts listed, and all your assets listed on one page. So that's a big, that probably took me a month. And I'm a finance person, so I'm comfortable with numbers, so it's a big job. So I do, you know, you can ask for help with that, and I definitely did, but I've helped a lot of people put their numbers together and summarize it into one page. I think people don't want that level of clarity. It's frightening, but it is the first step to, you know, making positive changes. So I'm happy to help anyone with that. Let's see. Okay, so one page, incomes and expenses. Oh, and then the other thing that I found I had to do, and I find that people avoid doing is, you know, choose people for your PRG whose advice you actually want, and whose advice you will consider taking. Or if you don't want to take their advice or you have concerns about it, that you feel you can make an argument and have a conversation about it and talk to them. So you need to not only respect them, but feel comfortable enough with them to have a, you know, to fight with them, not fight, but to counter their suggestions and come up with a compromise. So it's a conversation. But it's interesting because I've worked with people in PRGs who have much less business experience than I do, who have much less, fewer assets than I've had, who, whatever, their situation is completely different. They've never worked in the business world, whatever, but they still have amazing advice and suggestions. And it's because I don't know, God works through all of us in these rooms, through every one of us, and we all have our own wisdom. And let's see. I had to be willing to hear some hard facts. One of the things that happened to me was my personal life got very pulled into the conversation, and I ended up, one of my action items became, you know, you need to get a divorce, at least. I'm like, really? That was hard to hear, and that was interesting, and how that conversation happened throughout multiple PRGs, and of course I didn't just say, oh, well, yes, whatever you say, but I did, you know, engage that conversation, and I ultimately did end up getting a divorce, and it was the best thing for me. I was a money codependent. I wanted to fix my husband with money, and I couldn't, so these are surprising events, and they are. I mean, that's where the power comes. Is if I really put my whole self into it, and I'm willing to do anything to change. So I need to be at my bottom. I you know, I really think that kind of summarizes the what hasn't been said. I mean, so much has been said about PRGs and all of the nuts and bolts, but I just wanted to give my own take and, you know, where the rubber hits the road for me.
Well, thank you. This
I think
is
that's
Diana.
It.
You're at about 15, so I think, well, you're at 10 minutes.
Okay,
but
perfect.
So love hearing you, Lee. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
For being part of this share and for getting up early in Northern California to participate.
Sure.
Anyway, I think we're going to turn now over to Laura from the Boston area to share her courage, strength, and hope. Thank you, Laura. Are you on?
I am on. Thanks, Diana, so much, and thanks to everyone for organizing this and for the opportunity to share. I'm Laura. I am a debtor and so grateful for DA. I've had like a DA day today. you know, with a sponsee calls, meeting this morning, and then my own PRG, not with Vanessa, a separate one. And, you know, the opportunity to be on this call. I've been in
Hello?
VA, and actually, could you give me 5 minutes and 1 minute warning?
Okay. Will do.
Thank you. Thanks. So I've been in DA. In November, it will be 16 years. Like, who comes into DA the month before Christmas? I don't know. I guess my shopping was totally out of control. And it's been in May. It will be 15 years since I've secured any new unsecured debt. I didn't realize when I came in that student loans were unsecured, so I co-signed one with my daughter. But since that May of 2014, I have not incurred any new unsecured debt, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, my life is totally different today than it was then, and I had heard about DA from people in the my first program, I call my foundational program. Someone was telling me about it. She was getting her finances straightened out, and she told me that she was meeting with people and talking about her finances, which I'm guessing she was talking about PRGs. I could not imagine anything so horrible. And it was one of the things that kept me away for a while. But, you know, I have found that the R is for relief. It's, you know, it's a pressure relief meeting, pressure relief group. And I've really found that to be the case. I was very vague about money when I came in. I can still stray into vagueness when I'm under duress. And what happened for getting me into program is I had been married before. My current husband and I have been married for 23 years. Just a miracle of DA recovery, because if it wasn't for DA, we would not still be together. But one day he said to me, you know, you have no idea the relationship between what money comes into the household and what money goes out. And he was always paying the bills, and if I charged up a credit card, he would pay it down. And he said, so you're going to need to start paying the bills. I'm not going to do it anymore. So he had set it up so that I could do it, and I'm a smart person. And I'm telling you, the first time I had to do it, I had what I call the DA flu. My back hurt. I was shaky. I thought I had a fever. You know, I can't do this, I'm sick, whatever, whatever. But somehow I pushed through it, and very soon after that, a friend of his was dating a woman, and we got together with them, and she was in DA, and there was a meeting right down the street from where they lived, and she met me there the next morning. And, you know, I got a sponsor. I asked around for a sponsor because I knew from my other program that I needed one. And so that sponsor helped me, you know, it took me a little while to find one, but that sponsor helped me get set up for a PRG because I kept hearing about them, you know, pressure relief meetings, and that was a lot of where the recovery was. And I love the topic today, the transformational power, because we're only as sick as our secrets. And I had a lot of secrets, a lot of shame around money, like all the other folks have shared. In my house, you didn't talk about it. It was shameful. When my father would pay the bills, which was not consistently, he would be all agitated and swearing and volatile, and you knew you didn't want to go with him, go anywhere near him. And that was, you know, that was how I related to money. And so, you know, it was something to be avoided. And so my sponsor and someone else offered to do my first PRG with me, and what I was taught was that it was my responsibility, so I asked people if they could do it for me. I helped find a place near the my home meeting on Saturday mornings. There's a library where a lot of people do PRGs. There are also a couple of other places. It was up to me to bring materials like notepads, pens, calculators, make sure everybody has what they need. Be on time, be respectful for the people that were committing this time for me. What I do now, I was kind of clueless in the beginning, but is to prepare a list of pressures. And I will also suggest to people that I'm doing pressure relief groups for, that they log their expenses for the past 3 months, and I have a spending plan template that I'll send them. I, you know, use these as a start for categories. Take the 3 months, add it up, divide by three. That's your average. That's a start. That's where we're gonna get the spending plan from, because that's what folks did for me. You know, that PRG, the first one, when I had the DA flu, I was able to get most of a spending plan done from that. The spending plan continues to evolve over time. And then I found one of the most, you know, we always would start. I was amazed how organized people were with these, people that had experience. We start with the Serenity Prayer, you know, or whatever prayer works. Start with a prayer. Ask someone else to take notes so that I can focus on, you know, visioning and just thinking about what I need to do and not be distracted. Let's see. And we all, at the end, I've done visioning in PRGs and done visioning for other people when I'm doing PRGs for them. And at we finish up with an action plan. What are the things that I need to work on? Some of the things from my PRG this morning, for example, is to set up the annual meeting with our financial planner. I'm having dental implant done. I need to call the oral surgeon's office again to get really clear on what I'm going to owe when this is done in June. I need to check in with my PCP about something. My husband and I are going to start working on a retirement spending plan, so I'm going to take some action on that. Create more savings categories in my spending plan and create specific dollar amount goals for those. So those are some of the things that I'm going to be working on. And I find another thing that's really critical is to set up the date for the next PRG at the end of the current PRG. Because as we know, everybody's busy. Lots of folks in DA seem to work other programs. Folks have a lot of different things going on. And it's important to try and nail the date down. I find personally it's always easier to change a date than to try and find a date. And we look to make that date sacred. So unless it's a really huge family thing, it's not going to change. And an example of a couple of things I've been able to accomplish with PRGs, with my family, with my father's job, we had lived in Italy for a year when I was in elementary school, which was a really long time ago. And I let it slip at one of my PRGs that, you know, it had been my dream, because I have a hard time allowing myself to dream and to vision. And I let it slip, and I'm goofing on myself when I say it that way, but I wanted to go back to Italy, and they were all over it. They were like, well, start a category. I said, well, I don't have enough money to go to Italy. They said, you don't need it today. You know, start it with $5, with $10. So I created a category, and the more the money built, the more focused I became on it. As I got raises and things, I was able to allocate more money into that category. And my previous job, I was able to get, I got bonuses, so I would allocate a portion of the bonus towards it. And the money built up, and within 3 or 4 years, I had saved up $10,000. And my husband and I went to Italy for 2 weeks, paid cash for everything, and actually came back with money left over. We didn't deprive ourselves. We did everything that we wanted to do. And that was just a miracle that was accomplished. I, you know, mismanaged money for all of my, you know, young and adult life. So when my son, who has graduated from college a few years ago now, was getting ready to go to college, I did not have savings for him. So with the help of my PRG, I was able to find room in my spending plan to allocate money for him and be able to give him a certain amount of money every month. You know, I had shame around that. I felt like I should be giving him more, you know, should. And I was able to give him an amount that was comfortable, and he took responsibility for the rest. And you know, I was grateful to be able to help him. When my husband and I owned our home, the hot water heater died at one point. It was going to be $8,000 to replace it, and we didn't have that much in our, you know, house contingency category. So PRG suggested ask around, and I did, and I asked around. We were able to get the same, you know, level of quality equipment for $5,000. And they helped me figure out a way to pay it. So that was pretty, without debting, you know, and that was pretty miraculous. And I have found from PRGs that clarity brings relief. I need to have PRGs regularly with the group that I work with now. There are three of us, the same three of us meet. We meet for 2 hours. We each take 40 minutes, and we each give each other a PRG. And that's that original group that I was in, that group dissolved, and then I was doing PRGs with different people. But I find that this way, in a committed group, helps me be accountable because, boy, I want to be, dishonest when I'm under stress. I don't want to talk about things, and this really helps me do that. I spoke with them about I work for an employer, but I also have the opportunity occasionally to do some self-employed consulting type work, and I turned some down, and, I wish I had checked in with my PRG about it because I would have handled it differently. I have fear about it, but they had suggested a different way to deal with it. The first PRG was my sponsor, who was a woman and a man. I believe strongly that gives balance, but I think if you can get to other people, do it. And it definitely gives a different perspective. As someone said earlier, the PRG is really, I can go in like all fired up with all kinds of ideas. And it's really the serenity prayer in the beginning is bringing God into the group. What does this person need? I do truly believe that all of us at our core know what we need and how can we help facilitate a PRG for someone so that we make it, give it an atmosphere of allowing that to happen, of letting the person express how they really feel. Because I felt like things, my thoughts, my feelings, whatever, were totally foolish, and I'm sure other people have similar fears. So if I can, create an atmosphere where someone feels comfortable saying the unsayable, then that to me is the, and build that level of trust, and that's the ultimate service. And being able to pause and saying, gee, I don't know, what do you think? Or, let's think about that for a minute, rather than jumping in with whatever I think my agenda is. I've been triggered by things I've heard in PRGs. I've done, as others have said, people that have a lot, PRGs for people that have a lot more money than me, people have a lot less money than me. And how do I reserve judgment and ask my higher power, invite my higher power in to help with this? And just the idea of being able to chat with people about what's really going on, about people who know my history and can call me out on things in a nice way. But I've been overly generous. I don't like to use labels, but I have been overly generous with my kids because of guilt that I have had because I did raise them, actively dating and actively in other addictions. And how do I set boundaries with them? And it's gotten to the point where my daughter won't call me about money anymore, but she will call my husband because she knows I might say no. Or I might say, I'm not sure. Let me sleep on that. And so I can set much better boundaries today. And with my grandkids as well, they'll come and it's like, oh, let's go to Grammy's. We can, go do this and that and the other thing. And I'll say to them, okay, we've got this much money. I can get you a haircut or we can go out to eat. Which one do you want more? Let's look at how much money we have to spend. So I can bring that to them as well. My husband and I are able to talk about money now, which in the beginning of our marriage was, oh my gosh, it was so painful. And both of us would retreat to our corners for days, literally. And now that's not so much the case. We talk about retirement. He and I have very different visions of it. But I do have faith that because of PRGs and because of DA, that we will find our way. And that we will figure out what's going to work best for both of us. So we're able to, when we travel, we do spending plans. We're hoping to go to, we're going to Italy again in September. We may be doing a family visit trip this summer. And we're already starting the spending plans. I'm not going to buy the tickets until I know that this is how much it's probably going to cost. this is how much we have, and how is that gonna work out? And that's what folks in my PRG would remind me about. It's, you know, they're almost selfish in a way for me to do them with other people, because being able to be of service to someone like that, to see the awareness light up in their eyes, to see someone, you can tell the reaction, like, oh my God, there's hope here. You know, I'm not the worst. This is not the worst financial situation you've ever seen. And to be able to help impart to other people that, you know, we do develop spending plans in a PRG that meets our needs first, and it's not about deprivation. To me, it's more about the choices. I mean, there are choices that I might make. My husband and I cut the cord on cable not too long ago, and we had a storage unit from when we moved 8 or 9 years ago, I'm embarrassed to say it, that had a bunch of stuff in it that we weren't using, and there was stuff we'd give away, stuff we could throw out, you know, some of it we brought into our home, and, you know, what we could store, and my daughter's storing some of it, and so it was $95 we saved on cable and almost $170 on the storage unit monthly, so now we're putting that money directly into savings. And that's something that I worked out with my PRG. What are we going to do with that money? You know, and I owned up to them that, yes, we'd like to do this. We're not saving as much as we like. Then I could get their input on that. And it's also helpful for me to see what they're going through. So, I don't know, for folks that are listening, if you have any reservations about it, what comes to me about PRGs and other things in DA is that if I'm not willing to walk through my fear, then I'm going to stay where I am. And in recovery, what I've been told is there's no status quo. There's no plateauing. You're either moving forward or you're falling back. And I don't want to fall back, you know, and I definitely do not want to go back to the way that I was living before, full of fear and not talking to people about how I was, you know, about finances and things like that. Like just having so many secrets, it gets exhausting. So anyway, I guess that's all that I've got to say about PRGs, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to share, and again, grateful to folks for all the service that you've done. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your share, Laura. I just wanted to take this moment to thank all of our speakers, which includes Vanessa and Jerry and Elise and Laura. And before we go into asking for question and answers or participations by the listener, we are going to take a moment for a seventh tradition announcement. So here it is. The General Service Office is self-supporting through contributions of DA groups and members everywhere. The General Service Office cannot serve you or any suffering compulsive debtor without your personal and your group's experience, strength, hope, and financial support. Each DA member, each DA group, and the General Service Office is asked to provide regular financial support at every level, so each DA member group and the GSO can do the most important task that any of us has, to carry the message to the still suffering compulsive debtor. You may contribute to the fellowship after this call in two ways. You can mail a check made out to the DA-GSB, that's Good Service Board, I guess, General Service Board, located at the following address, DA General Service Office, P.O. Box 920888, Needham, Massachusetts, and that's NEEDHAM, Massachusetts, zip 02492. Or if you have a United States bank debit card, you can make an online contribution on the debtorsanonymous.org website. There's a contribution button found on the left-hand side of the page, or there's another menu drop area that says making a contribution, which will bring you to a link where you would put in your debit card information. And so there are two ways to do that. So, but you are more important than your money, so please just keep going to meetings and keep listening to these great worldwide fellowship calls. So at this time, I'm now going to take a moment to turn off the audio podcast recording and open up the meeting to any questions and personal shares by the listeners. So hold on for a minute and let me take care of that.